We're going to call the State Government Finance Committee to order. Members, in your packet, you're going to find the minutes from January 27th. And Representative Pugh, do you have a motion to make?
Yes. So moved, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Pugh moves to approve the minutes from January 27th for the State Government Finance Committee. Any comments, questions, concerns? If not, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The minutes for January 27th for State Government Finance have been approved. Members, you will find in your packet, in your folder, the Office of the Legislative Auditors have provided us some of the materials that we requested yesterday. This is regarding the correspondence that we discussed yesterday in our conversation on minute. So please make sure if you want to save that, to put that in your save folder. If you want to take it with you, that's fine too, to review it at a later time. For today's purposes, we are going to be going over, last week we had tours of both the Capitol Restoration Project and also the Legislative Office Building that is being built for the senators just behind the Capitol. We got a chance to tour both of those facilities. Today, we have the Department Administration is coming back to go over some of the questions that we asked during those tours to make sure that we get those on public record, and also to have us as a group to be able to have a conversation about what are the plans moving forward for the Legislative Office Building. We saw the governor's budget came out yesterday talking about how to pay for some of this, so we'll need to go over those details. You will also find in your packet that the Department Administration has provided you with kind of a little overview of what they do. So please feel free to take a look at that in your free time. I'm sure we'll get more conversation on that as we go over the governor's budget. But for today's purposes, we are going to be focused on the Capitol Restoration and the Senate Office Building that is being built. And with that, I'd like to invite the Department Administration. We have the Commissioner Matt Mossman here with us today. To start us off, I think what I'd like to do is kind of go over last week on Thursday. They had the space allocation portion, and I think it would be helpful if you could go over that first for the members and kick us off with that conversation. So with that, welcome, Commissioner Mossman. Nice to see you.
Madam Chair and members, good morning, and thank you for having us here this morning. Matt Mossman, Commissioner of Administration. If it's helpful, Madam Chair, if we could just take a couple minutes and just orient, because we do obviously a lot of projects, and just give like a two-minute overview of the Department of Administration so that you know how this project fits into all of the work that we do. Or
sure. Yes.
That'd be great. And I'm going to ask Mr. Scheer to do that very briefly and then be happy to move forward with the Capitol presentation.
Great.
Madam Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Matt Scheer, Legislative Director for the Department of Administration. Thanks for kicking it off, Commissioner. Today, he'll be giving a presentation about the Capitol, but I did want to provide just a brief overview of kind of some of the principal activities of the Department of Administration. The department was created by Governor Harold Stassen in 1939 and was founded on the idea that we could use economies of scale, specialized expertise, and other strategies to get the best value for our government services. Our mission is to provide the best value in government administrative services, and to accomplish this mission, we focus primarily on customer service by providing valuable results, continuous improvement by reducing costs and optimizing performance, and through employee engagement by enabling and encouraging our staff to achieve to help achieve our mission. Admin services are delivered by 15 different business units that serve agency customers that are organized into four different areas. The community services area provides a range of services to government and the public, including the Council on Developmental Disabilities, which provides information, education, and training that will lead to increased independence, productivity, self-determination, integration, and inclusion for people with developmental disabilities and their families. The Information Policy Analysis Division provides technical assistance to policymakers regarding government data and data practices, and it services a number of customers every year. The Office of Grants Management works to streamline and improve state grant-making process and administers the arts and cultural heritage portion of the legacy amendments. The STAR program is a federally funded program that helps Minnesotans with disabilities access assistive technology to help improve their lives. And then we also oversee the state archaeologist, who services 300 archaeological sites every year, and the state demographic center, which includes the state demographer that answers requests from agencies in the public, about demographic information. The financial services management and administration area is the second area of our agency activities, and they're comprised of three business units that provide a range of services, including financial management and human resources for the department. The small agency resource team, otherwise known as SMART, which provides administrative services on a consolidated basis to small agencies and organizations in government that need financial management and human resources but may not have the resources to undertake that themselves, so that then their resources can be focused on their core mission. A lot of different agencies really appreciate that service. And then finally, Admin's risk management unit insures over $14 billion worth of state property and administers the state's workers' compensation program and provides insurance management consulting services to other state agencies. The third area that we have in the department is the materials management area, which serves as the principal procurement specialists for the state of Minnesota, managing over $2.1 billion in goods and services purchases each year. And through aggressive contract negotiations and utilizing economies of scale, Admin achieves savings for state agencies in a number of ways, including last biennium we were able to achieve $49 million in cost avoidance through contract negotiations, and also by promoting equity in public contracting for veteran, minority, and women-owned small businesses. Currently, there are about 900 small businesses that benefit from contracting preference on state contracts. And finally, we have the facilities management area, which is the area that we toured in the last couple of, or last week, excuse me. And this is probably the most visible area of our operations. We manage 22 buildings around the Capitol complex. We provide maintenance, custodial, mail, facilities, and technical support and parking services to the Capitol complex. We provide construction oversight, including the Capitol restoration projects and the Minneapolis Veterans Homes. And we consult with other agencies to ensure that leased space outside of the Capitol complex fits agency needs. We manage the state fleet, and we also did manage to return $10.8 million to state agencies by selling over 5,000 lots of property in our surplus program last year. And in addition to these four areas, the Commissioner's Office also oversees the Office of Continuous Improvement, And to date, Admin has trained over 4,300 employees on continuous improvement principles that aim to refine process, reduce waste, and ensure the highest levels of efficiencies and performance within an organization. These efforts have garnered real results, including improving the permitting process at DNR, reducing the time it takes to issue and renew licenses at the Department of Labor and Industry, reducing staff time dedicated to handling appeals to the Department of Human Services. This year the office is currently offering five courses, including Continuous Improvement 101 and Kaizen facilitation. And beyond that, I did want to briefly stress that we are truly a statewide enterprise. In your packets, you'll see a handout that sort of looks like this. This is a map of each county in the state of Minnesota with a number denoting the services that we provide. And this is all of the services, from assistive technology to information data requests. It's a count, essentially, of how we interact with the state of Minnesota every year.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Scherer. With that, members, do you have any questions on the services they provide? Do know that you will have opportunities to go over this as we go over the different budget items. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think this will be kind of a quick one, but you referenced what I call the state stores, the purchasing that you do. And yesterday with IT, we touched on it a little bit about the role of local vendors and so on. A number of years ago, when I chaired one of the education committees, we had a bill that dealt with mandate reductions. And it focused mainly on higher education, but the one of the hot issues at the time was the requirement that our colleges and universities use the state stores for the purchases of for computers or whatever supplies they might need. And we kept hearing they could get a better buy often from local vendors. And so we put them out from under that requirement and basically gave them the choice, at least with the colleges and universities. If they could get a better buy with a local vendor, they could do that. If not, they would go through the state stores through your purchasing program. What kind of feedback do you get today on that kind of a question, being that it, with IT at any rate, it surfaced yesterday, you know, local vendors, and I know both of you are relatively new, so maybe that's a bit of history you're not aware of. Actually, to get the bill through, we had intervention on the part of the governor's office, Governor Carlson at the time. That's when it was, because we did get a lot of resistance from admin on that proposal. And after Governor Carlson intervened on the behalf of those of us that were working on the issue in the legislature, it did go through. So if you have a comment, and that's either one of you.
Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, there's been a lot of work done over in our fleet and surplus services area over the last decade, certainly, and it is ongoing to really focus the efforts on surplusing property primarily paying attention to what agencies need and local governments need and want in terms of where the demand is, so that there's an effort to make sure that the material can be turned over rather than ending up just accumulating because no one wants to purchase it and not at a good value. So it's actually come quite a long ways, as Mr. Shearer indicated earlier. We're now in a position where we are really able to turn over, and our customers are quite happy. More often than not, we're actually some of the more desired items go fairly quickly. It's a matter of it's a challenge kind of keeping things available that folks are looking for, either local government or state agencies. So it's really become more of a market-based demand decision rather than forcing agencies or entities to use us. I think most entities that use surplus services are coming there willingly and looking for good opportunities, and we hope to have a lot of them.
So maybe just a yes or no, Madam Chair. Then, so a state agency, because I know the higher ed institutions were released from that requirement. So a state agency, if they feel they can get a better buy with a local vendor, can use the local vendor?
Commissioner Mossman.
Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, I'll verify that, but I believe that they have that option, yes.
Thank you.
Great. And Commissioner Mossman, I don't know if it's going to be you or if it's going to be Mr. Scherer, but if you could just walk us through the space allocation that was agreed upon last week on the Capitol, and then also the timeline, but specifically the agreement that was made last Thursday.
Happy to, Madam Chair. And we actually, I see that you have some copies in your packet. We have, if you don't mind going around, some color copies, which you might find easier to follow. It is heavily color-coded document, and so I think you'll find that helpful. I thank you, Madam Chair and members. We appreciate the opportunity to have given the committee a tour of the facilities, and in particular, you know, the Capitol. As we all know, as the copies are going around, it's just an honor and a privilege to be able to work in the Capitol buildings, and it's really hard, I think, to put into words, frankly, without seeing at the grand scale of the work that one witnesses when they go through the Capitol. And so I appreciate the opportunity for the committee to have had taken a tour. The story of the Capitol complex obviously is a long one, and as we get started, I do have information both on the history as well as the current space allocation plan. And you know, one of the things that's, I think, important as we get into the space allocation plan, because it really frames up what is going on in terms of the substantial amount of additional public space in the Capitol, is that this is really, just for context, I think it's interesting, when the building opened, when Cass Gilbert's original design and building opened in 1905, the population of Minnesota was about 1.8 million people, and the population is now 5.5 million people. And the Capitol has really continuously evolved over time, as have the state office building that came along in 1932 and the other buildings state buildings around the Capitol complex has continuously evolved in terms of how it's used, who's in it, how the space has been arranged and allocated, but always obviously the center of state government and the people's building. And so,
and Commissioner, I know you mentioned earlier in your comments that you are going to walk us through kind of the what it was before, but I know when I had part of the tour, I had asked Mr. Wozlowski if we could actually have a visual of that, of what it was prior to renovation and then what it's going to be. And if you could get that to Mr. Seidel, I think that would be helpful for us too.
Sure, Madam Chair. I think what we could make available, what one would need to do is essentially look at the floor plan before and after would be the best way to do it. I think it'll be hard to put it on one document. The current restoration that's going on really has the conversation started in the 70s. As we look back at documents, and certainly over the last 30 years, there's been a series of studies, including a study that in 2000 that called for a new building to be built along with the Capitol restoration in order to provide more public space and to provide space for state senators so that there could be different uses in the Capitol. And that proceeded with an updated pre-design that included a Capitol expansion below ground in the front of the Capitol in 2005 and 6, and you know, just a number of studies to evolve to where we are today. And so if you have in front of you the plan as it is currently laid out, and there, one thing, you know, just to emphasize, and I'll call some of them out as we go through the plan, substantially more public space. You all are familiar with how many people come to the Capitol. We have about 120,000 visitors to the Capitol each year, about 370 events in the Capitol, and that doesn't include all of the events that take place outside of the Capitol, impromptu and scheduled on the Capitol grounds and Capitol steps and plaza. So quite a bit of activity, a lot of that focused during the legislative session, from school kids to constituency groups to stakeholders. And so this building, as the state's population has grown, I think will just much better accommodate for generations to come how the public is served and how the state capitol building serves the legislative process. So lower level, which as we, I think, have all maybe historically called it the basement, and I think when it's finished will be much more up to the name of a lower level rather than a basement. One of the primary things that is both additional public space and I think will be one of the real neat additions to the state capitol is, even though we have many of us of course are familiar with walking straight through the capitol tunnel before the restoration started from one end of the building to the other, and seeing the cables hanging in trays and things like that that will now obviously no longer be there. But the rotunda, of course, has a foundation that goes all the way down through the lower level, and that will be captured space that will create a public event space that mimics the circular room layout of both room 15, the hearing room above it, and the rotunda all the way up. And so you can see additional public event space there in the center of the building on the lower level, as well as there will be expanded dining space. We're all familiar with how congested the dining hall can be, particularly during session. And I'm, Madam Chair, if you don't mind, I'm not actually going to necessarily go through all of the there can get okay. to be quite a color coding, go through all of the color coding, but people can ask questions if they'd like.
I would like to. I'm looking at, on the far left corner, we've got a total of the Senate office space of 2,514 square feet. Can you give me, you know, is this duplicating? What's housed in that Senate space, both on the left-hand side, and then there's a little chunk? Not the storage space. I'm not concerned about that. It's the actual office space that I'm looking at. Can you give me a better description of what that includes?
Sure. Madam Chair, just a real quick overview, so this might be helpful. The Senate currently has about 80, prior to restoration, has about 81,000 square feet in the Capitol. And after restoration, we'll have about 38,000 square feet in the Capitol. So a substantial change. I should kind of at the start, maybe actually a better, more important starting point than that is the usable square footage in the Capitol itself is about 176,000 square feet before restoration and 158,000 after. So one of the major changes in the Capitol, obviously, is to accommodate public standard or current standards in terms of health and safety and all of that. It takes up substantial additional space in terms of mechanicals. So there's a major change in the Capitol in that regard.
And just to make sure I had the numbers, it was 176 before and 158 after?
That's correct.
Thank you. Commissioner?
Madam Chair, there is essentially, there is both the House and the Senate have storage space in the Capitol and also some, this is not meeting room space. So you can see that both over on the right-hand side, the House has storage space, and the Senate has similar space in the lower level. And that's primarily what it is.
Right. But then there's the office space for both the House and the Senate. In particular, the Senate's got a chunk over on the left-hand side next to the governor's offices. And if I remember from the tour correctly, I think this was the level that the governor had added some conference room space in there. At least I know the one chunk was, or maybe that's up a level. I can't remember. If you can kind of walk through
that. I believe that's
up
a level, Madam Chair.
That's so up a level?
Yeah,
okay.
I believe that's where you come in from the tunnel. I believe that's printing and copying services there for the Senate. So if we go up a level, Madam Chair and members, to...
But prior to going up a level, just sure. A second, on the Senate office space here then on the corner, what is that? What is that the duplicating then? Is
I believe
that,
that's the duplicating.
That's okay. All right. And then you said up a level is where we have the conference room space. What about still back on the basement level, you've got a little office off on the right-hand side for the Senate. Do you know what would be in there, or what are they housing there?
Madam Chair, off the top of my head, I can get you that information.
Sure.
I'm not exactly sure what that's allocated for.
That'd be great.
Madam Chair.
Representative Lane.
I'm looking at this and I don't see how the tunnel goes through. Could you just explain that?
Commissioner Mossman.
Madam Chair and Representative Lane, absolutely. It goes through very differently from how it does now. So for the most part, you will walk into the, if you follow from the left-hand side of the map there, you can come in and take a left, essentially, and go to the central area of the building. And then what will happen is you'll just essentially walk around the public event room in the same way that you walk around room 15 right now on ground floor. So there's not a direct corridor, so you'll walk into the building, and as you get up to the red space, the public event space in the center, you'll either go left or right and go around that space. Through the public space underneath the stairs and head out to your right along the purple and out of the building.
You'll have arrows for us, right?
Wayfinding, Madam Chair, I believe is what it's called.
All right. Okay, Commissioner, could you go to the ground floor then, please? Oh, really? Oh, okay.
So, Madam Chair and members, somewhat self-explanatory on the ground floor. You can see that the Senate continues to have, will have hearing rooms in two buildings. So the Senate will continue to have hearing rooms in the Capitol, and they are primarily here. They are here. So you see three hearing rooms, one in the left-hand north corner, one in the right-hand south corner, and then room 15. Governor's office space on the, there's some additional House space on the right-hand side, and then what I think is some really exciting new space for the Minnesota Historical Society, that orange color will provide some educational rooms for the many student groups in particular who come through the Capitol on tours, and so that there's an opportunity, a resting point for students and other visitors to get educational information or presentations on the Capitol as part of the tour. And that space will also help back up and be supplement during legislative session.
And Commissioner, one of the questions we had during the tour was, how does the space get reserved? Is that through your office, or are you guys still kind of figuring out who's in charge of the public space? If somebody wanted, for example, to reserve this space next to the Minnesota Historical Society?
Madam Chair and members, good question. This will be Historical Society space, so the Historical Society will manage the space.
The public red space that's on here?
The red space, we're in the, this is a general comment, the red space, we're throughout the building, we're at the front end of having that conversation.
Okay.
So in terms of the, we have event staff right now that work, where we schedule space, obviously there will be substantially more public space and different uses, and so we're really focused on building a building right now, and we're also at the front end of that conversation as to the protocols and procedures and processes that we'll have in place for that.
Okay, and making it easy for people to navigate who to call and everything. Okay. And then, Commissioner, the bank of offices that are, I don't see where the north is. I assume it's the north end of the Capitol. Yeah, that's north. What is all of that? Can you kind of describe what that is?
Madam Chair and members, this is Senate nonpartisan staff on both sides. It's on the right-hand side, I believe it's work and sergeant's office staff. That takes up both sides. One side is the right side, I believe, is some resting space for during session staff to support the many committees that will still go on in the building for the Senate, and the left-hand side is sergeants and other nonpartisan Senate staff are slated for there.
Okay, so when you say nonpartisan staff, you're saying so Senate research, but what do you mean by the resting space? Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Madam Chair and members, I believe that the Senate is anticipating using that space both for council research, fiscal staff, and the like during the legislative session, and again, that's the Senate will work out that space.
And then Commissioner Mossman, looking off to the left, the west side there, what is all of that? You've got a committee hearing room, and then there's an office adjacent to that. What would that be?
Madam Chair, if there's a hearing room, and I believe that there's a small meeting room off the hearing room.
Okay. And members, to help you out, on the big map that you have in your folder, it actually says what it is. My eyesight isn't that great, though, so I'm holding it like this to try and see it. But I see that it's listed as an office space, that little chunk to the left. So whose office would that be? And then are there going to be any partisan staff that would be in the Capitol building at all?
So, Madam Chair, I believe that the Senate actually had that slated for human resources. And again, much like the House space that's allocated on the map as we go throughout, both the House and the Senate, as you currently allocate space in this building, will allocate space. But I believe that that was slated for... It is not slated for a member office. I know that. I don't know exactly who the Senate plans on being in there. Madam Chair.
But you think it might be HR? Okay. And then with the office space, then that's adjacent on the east side to the hearing room there. Do you know what that is going to be, Commissioner? Or is that another conference room?
It's a conference room.
Okay. Okay, but just to be sure, the chunk on the north side is supposed to be nonpartisan staff, and then with senators using it during legislative session time.
That's my understanding, Madam Chair, yes.
Okay. And then can you tell me, you'd given us kind of the square footage, too, of the for the Senate pre and post, what would it be for the governor's office as well? What's their pre-square footage and what's their post-square footage?
Madam Chair and members, the governor's office has 9,000 square feet and will have 16,000 square feet in the rent of restored capital.
9,000 pre, 16,000 post. Okay. Representative Schultz?
What about the House?
And yes, Commissioner, what is the House as well?
Madam Chair and members, the House has, prior to restoration, about 26,000 square feet and will have about 30,000 square feet.
All right. Commissioner. Okay. Members, any other questions on this level or the last level I forgot to ask? Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, thank you. Commissioner, question for you. In the dedication of public space, Minnesota has a great number of diverse faith groups. Is there a non-denominational chapel that's been considered anywhere in the public space allocation?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair and Representative, there has not.
Okay. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Mossman, so I'm just, when I look at this ground floor plan, you've got a lot of the public using this east side a bit, you know. So I'm just curious if the entrances on the east side are going to be, you know, put to more use in terms of public access. And so it seems to me that they don't get used much. There's not, you know, no bus drop-offs that I'm aware of. And what's the plan for the east entrances?
Commissioner Entrance.
Madam Chair and Representative Runbeck, very good question. And I think that also that will become part of the conversation that I think we're on the front end right now, just in terms of the uses and the programming and the policies. You know, we have the Capitol will be substantially completed in 2017 legislative session open for. So to date, our focus really has been obviously on working with the tenants, the legislature, policymakers, in terms of getting the construction substantially underway, getting all of the contracts in place to move forward with the construction. And as we move through and multitask the project, we will now be kind of shifting gears to those kinds of questions. Mm-hmm. How is Aurora Avenue used? What are the what I would say is that generally speaking, one of the great improvements of that will come from the restoration is a substantially improved access in terms of people with disabilities. There'll be much better access to the Capitol, to parking nearby the Capitol, particularly with the opening of Lot F that recently opened and having more space for the disability community in that Capitol. So all of those considerations are being taken into account. And that will include conversations about whether or not the public and school kids in particular are directed primarily through the east end of the building versus other spaces.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Mossman or Commissioner Mossman, the plans we're looking at reflect an agreement between the governor's office, the House, and Senate leadership. That's correct?
Commissioner Mossman.
Madam Chair and Representative Johnson, yes, and as I would point out, was reminded by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, also the courts and the Attorney General were also certainly called out in statute as providing a tenant sign-off agreement. And so all of those parties have formally signed off on their space. And I think the important thing in response, you know, and thinking about the question that you asked is, we have been, there's not enough good things that can be said about Wayne Wozlowski, who's been managing this project for us, has been working hand-in-hand with all of the tenants, even beyond those five entities, with the media, which has a significant presence, obviously, in the building, and just other smaller stakeholders that didn't have an official sign-off as part of the process necessarily, but making sure that the space works well. I think it's important that to note that even though, you know, a lot of this conversation tends to get viewed within the near-term time frame that it's happening, our hope, really, and intent, and the goal, and the driving principles behind the capital restoration is a recognition that this is the first, the only real, but the first significant restoration of the capital in 110 years. And the intent is to put the capital on a good footing for another 110 years and have a building that works well for the legislature, for the policymaking process, for the public who needs to access the policymaking process, and for all the activities that happen throughout the building.
Madam Chair?
Representative Johnson.
So who signed off for the House on this then?
Commissioner Mossman.
Madam Chair and members, it was officially the Chief Clerk, the Secretary of the Senate, and so the Chief Clerk.
And Commissioner Mossman, since we're getting the square footage too, I forgot about the Chief Justice and the Attorney General. What was their square footage change up to?
Madam Chair, the Attorney General space is largely unchanged. It actually declined a little bit because of mechanicals. From it was 5,400 and now it's 5,300 square feet, rounding.
It was 53 and went to 54.
It was 54 and went to 53.
Thank you, Commissioner. Yep. And what about the public?
Madam Chair, the Supreme Court, you mean, or the public?
The public first, sure. And then Supreme Court, too.
The public space nearly doubled from about, from 20,000 to about 40,000 square feet.
Madam Chair?
And just one moment. And then the Attorney General's office? Or not the Attorney, the Supreme Court?
The Supreme Court, Madam Chair, went from about 3,800 square feet to about 4,700 square feet.
Okay. Representative Johnson, I think you had a follow-up.
One final question. Would any change in space allocation then have to be in agreement with the tenants that are at the Capitol complex? Or how does that work if there was going to be a change in any of this space?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair and Representative Johnson, there's a, to more thoroughly respond to kind of, so when the capital, the authorizing legislation for the capital restoration project was put in place, there was an expectation that before the final work packages could move forward, that those five tenants that I talked about would be signing off on the space. Separate from that, there has been a historical space allocation agreement between the Senate, the House, and the Governor that has been periodically revised. The most recent one that has now been replaced was put in place in 2003, and that agreement, as it pertains to the Capitol, has been replaced now by a new space allocation agreement that reflects this year map that you're looking at. And it would need to be agreed to by the party, by all three. Changes in space allocation would need to be agreed to by all three of those parties.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Mossman, you've described a lot of people that are involved in this process, and I can only begin to fathom the vibrant conversations that must go through some of these decisions. I'm wondering if you could just kind of give me a broad overview in terms of the chain of command, in terms of the hierarchy, who is really the tip of the arrow in making these decisions? Who consults with who? Who is the final arbiter of yes, no on these decisions? You mentioned the Historical Society, the Capital Preservation Committee, both Senate, Governor, the House, the Chief Clerk. I'm curious in terms of who's at the top, and how do you work your way down in terms of collaboration, and who's the final authority on these matters?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair and Representative Albright, a very good question, and to your point about how many influential parties are involved in the discussions, I would hesitate to pick one point of the arrow. I think that, as is the legislative process, as is the public process, there are many entities that are involved, and this has been a real collaborative effort, I think, on many levels to make sure that the Capitol building for the future is the outcome, and that the project remains on time contractually. When you in terms of the work that's being done by the prime contractor and the subs, the Department of Administration, the Commissioner of Administration, contractually engages in the work that's being done. But this is in terms of the space allocation decisions, and this is very much an effort that involves the House, the Senate, the Governor, the stakeholders. I'm not going to pick one of those as being the primary decision maker. It's really an effort to work out something that works for all of those parties.
Okay. One follow-up, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I noticed on our tour, and as others have noticed and mentioned, we have a lot of legacy art that is in the building itself, and I know that you'll probably get some other questions on this, but I'm just wondering in terms of what's the disposition of replacement in terms of alternatives, but how are we intending to put it back in place as it was, and the restoration of those legacy pieces of artwork in terms of making sure that either they're cleaned or restored to what and who is responsible? Is that the Historical Society? And is that budgeted in to the money that was appropriated for the capital restoration, or will that be a supplemental request for antiquities type of restoration?
Commissioner Mossman.
Madam Chair, Representative Albright, thank you for the question. And actually, that gives me a chance to just refine a little bit what we were just talking about as well, which is the Capital Preservation Commission. Again, all of the entities that that have been stakeholders in the process, when the enabling legislation for the restoration project was put in place in 2011, I believe, enacted, was put in place, and that has representation from all of the states. The governor actually chairs that. It has representation from the House and Senate and all of the stakeholders and the public on the Preservation Commission, and has been, as provided for in statute, has been called on to be signing off on the work packages as they've been. The project is managed. Any project of this scope doesn't kind of all happen at once, so it was intentionally broken up into four work packages, if you will, a sequencing of the work, and those work packages have the approval of the Capital Preservation Commission prior to them moving forward, and that has now happened. So all of the work, essentially, with work package 4 and the actions of the Preservation Commission last week, now mean that all of the major approvals needed to move the project forward and complete the project have been provided. In response to your question on art, it's relevant and brings back to the Preservation Commission, and that obviously is a significant aspect of the Capitol. And the Preservation Commission has established a subcommittee, or has identified co-chairs, and is in the process of establishing a subcommittee to do work on that very question in terms of both assessing and bringing the conversation forward as to how we go about making sure that Capitol Art is properly cared for and restored also. You are correct that the preservation of all of the art in the Capitol, because there's many different kinds of art. There's decorative art that's on the walls. There's hung art. There's affixed art in different ways. And so the budget did not cover, provide, that is not in scope, the restoration of all of that artwork. There is some decorative work and work that painting that's right on the walls that is in budget and it within scope, and so that is a conversation that needs to be had yet as to how we go about making sure that there's resources available to do that. And I just want to say one more thing about this, because I think this is an interesting conversation, but one of the things as Commissioner of Administration and at the department that we are really wanting to be cognizant of is that it's in many ways it's ideal to kind of fully understand what the scope of the issue is, assess all the art, know what the challenges are and what the potential need is, and then proceed with prioritizing and going about it. What is unique, of course, about a Capitol building is there are many difficult to reach areas, and oftentimes from an efficiency standpoint in terms of the not only the work but the cost built in to put up and take down scaffolding, etc., it is much more sensible in many ways to proceed with all of that work from a geographic standpoint as you work your way through the project rather than kind of getting done and going back to some areas. So that's one of the things that is a priority for me to look at to make sure that we're approaching that as efficiently as possible. So.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Commissioner, on kind of along those same lines, so then they don't really know quite yet what the ballpark figure will be, it sounds like, and have you looked at it? Is this something that would be eligible for legacy funds, or is this looking, are you looking to do a bonding request for this, or will this come out of the Historical Society's budget? Where are we at in that process?
Madam Chair, good question. I'll leave it to the legislature and the conversation that will follow us to where it could come from. I don't have a ballpark number right now, and the governor doesn't formally have a request in front of you right now at this point, so I would say that we're scoping and trying to quickly scope so that we can have that conversation, because obviously it is a relevant piece of information for this legislative session, and so I will stay close to yourself and the committee as soon as we have more information on that.
Have we looked at other states and what they have had to spend for this type of restoration of the artwork and so forth that have done major renovations? We've had several actually across mm-hmm. the country in recent, probably the last 5 years. So do we have a ballpark figure from them on how much they had to spend? Or?
Madam Chair, as I sit here right now, I don't have a ballpark figure from them. That may be a convenient way to get some sense from other capitals.
Okay. All right. Members, we're going to go to 9:10 on this piece alone, but then I also want to get to the actual Senate office building as well. And we have a couple of people on the list. So I've got Representative Nelson up next. But what we'll do when we hit 9:10, we're going to pause. We're going to go through the Senate office building. Then if we have time at the very end, we'll come back to this, okay? Otherwise, feel free to talk to Commissioner Mossman offline. He's there.
Absolutely.
They've been very helpful. And I have to say kudos to Mr. Wozlowski. He's done a great job. So thank you for his
Fantastic.
Service.
Fantastic.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And when we were talking about it, he was giving you all the numbers for space allocation. I was going to say it would be helpful if you could give to the committee a list of pre-renovation and post-renovation for the space for the House, the Senate, the Governor, the courts, the AG, the public, and also the mechanical space that they've increased in, so that we could look at that side by side on a list. And I know everyone was writing it down, but it would be great if they could print that out for us. And I guess the other request I would have is, Madam Chair, you asked for a map of the pre-renovation layout breakdown like this, and it might be helpful if they did it pre and post on a sheet like this so that we could look back and forth, so that looking at the floor plans that we can get a visual of it. I know some people don't have, can't vision that, you know, and some people have harder times visioning that than others. The one question I had that that I was going to ask later on, but a question that came to me from a constituent has to do with unisex bathrooms. Are we going to have any of those? I mean, looking here, it looks like there might be one on the ground floor. I know we have a couple now that are unisex bathrooms. Are we going to have any of those with the addition of bathrooms in the Capitol?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair and Representative Nelson, thank you for the question. So when the Capitol was originally designed, I would just call out in 1905, and many of you know this history certainly, and are familiar with how challenging even before restoration it can be to find a restroom in the Capitol, especially for the public. There were not bathrooms for women because women weren't anticipated to be in the place of government, and obviously that is thankfully not the case now. And so one of the significant improvements among many, I think, in the Capitol, and both for the public and for everyone, is on the whatever page you're looking at, and conveniently you can find them on whatever page you're looking at on the floor print. So on the north side of the building, right near the cantilevered stairwell, the oval stairwell, on the north side of the building, there will be stacked men's and women's restrooms next to each other on each floor of the Capitol.
And Commissioner, are those accessible to the public, or do they have to go through the green space to get to them?
Madam Chair and members, if we're looking, they are at publicly accessible. I'm not sure what green space you're, want to make sure we're, sorry, not that oval staircase, the main, just off the rotunda area, okay, where you have the...
I see. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Quickly, Representative Nelson.
Just so no unisex bathrooms are... They're all going to be men's and women's, not family bathrooms or unisex, you know, bathrooms that either gender or non-specific gender could use.
There's a...
Commissioner.
And if you don't have the answer right now, we can get back. You can get back.
Mr. Madam Chair, Representative, there are definitely family rooms, and I don't want to consider it the equivalent. There's also, because we also get, so there are some family rooms in answer to the question, and I'm not quite sure about, there are also some bathrooms back in caucus space, for example, House caucus space. And so I don't believe that those are men's and women's. I believe that that's a unisex bathroom also. So there will be some scattered throughout the Capitol, but the primary public restrooms.
Okay. Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, thank you. Commissioner, while we were on our tour, we were told that there was a number of jobs being created as a result of the renovation project, and the number that we were given was 3,000 jobs that have been or will be created. And I was just wondering, definitionally, what constitutes a job in that number of 3,000? Is it a part-time job? Is it a full-time job? If you could maybe provide for the committee at a later date, or if you have the answer now, what actually is considered a job?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, I don't have a description of that with me at this time. What I would say is that the Capitol, again, being a complex building, has a wide variety of professions and construction industry expertise in the building. So there is undoubtedly work that is full-time, to work that is part-time, to work that is to folks who will be working at the Capitol the entire length of the restoration project, to people who will be working at the Capitol restoration project during phases, depending upon their area of expertise and the role of the subcontractors' work. So I don't, you know, it will vary much like any major construction project, I think, that would go on. The jobs depend on the nature of the work.
All right. Just one last question from me, Commissioner, too. On the space...
Madam Chair, I've been in line here for about 20 minutes, and we've called on a couple of these people twice. I would like to be considered for a question.
Well, Representative Earhart, we apologize. They didn't see you raise your hand. I do keep a list. My staff has both are looking.
Well, I've been sitting here like this. I'll tell you, I don't know how high you want me to raise it. I raise it like this.
Representative Earhart,
like this,
I haven't.
Because my arm
either.
Gets tired up in the air.
Okay. But Representative Earhart, I would ask that you respect the other members as well. If you can ask your question, and then we'll go on from there.
I was respecting him by standing, and he's called out twice, and he still didn't call me. So I'm putting in a formal complaint that I would like to be called on, and your accepted ladder there, or whoever you're calling on.
Ask your question.
Okay, my question is, what happens to the bathrooms around adjacent to the chamber? Because it looks to me like you've eliminated one of the... Either the men's or the women's bathrooms that are in near the retiring room.
Commissioner Mossman.
That's on the second floor plan.
You're going to have to travel somewhere else, I think, is what's going to happen.
I think
men go downstairs.
Commissioner Mossman.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, let me make sure that I have the correct information for you. I will actually get back to you. There's most certainly bathrooms available in the chamber that are being maintained. There is one that I believe is just being displaced because there's some connectivity that's going on between the floors and being repositioned. But let me get the details back to you.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm asking that.
Representative Earhart, please go through the chair.
Ma'am, here is what I said. That's your name. Do you want me to call you Representative?
I just asked.
Chair Anderson, Madam Chair, I called you out as Madam Chair.
And Representative Earhart, all I ask is that you wait until you're recognized. So, Representative Earhart.
The drawing shows, Madam Chair, that there is only one bathroom adjacent to, which is in the position of the man's bathroom there now, and that either leaves the man or the woman out, depending on how you want it. That's why I'm asking.
Well,
I think that's a very important function of the administration building, the administration department, to see that we have adequate facilities. If you're going to put them out in the hall, you ought to put them in there for the members as well.
Great. Thank you, Representative Earhart. And Commissioner Mossman, you said to us that you were going to get us the information.
I'm getting clarification. I'll have it for you in a moment.
Perfect. Thank you. Representative Earhart, any other questions?
No, thank you.
Great. Thank you. All right, members, we're going to move on to the Senate office building. Commissioner Mossman, if you can walk us through just the timeline on completion, what you can anticipate as far as usage of the space in the Capitol, and how many people are going to be housed over there, and just kind of where we're at with the plans on the Senate office building, please.
Madam Chair and members, the Senate, the office building is going quite well. Mortensen is, I just must say, is doing a fantastic job of moving that project along, and has, again, Mr. Wislofsky, can't enough be said about his good work in managing that project and these projects together. And so many Minnesota companies participating in that company, but being led by the Mortensen Group, and the project is moving speedily along. I don't know about you, but I was unable to conveniently access getting to our building this morning because of a caravan of Kempstone concrete trucks this morning. So there was a lot of activity, a new pour going on in the building this morning. So the project is on schedule to be substantially completed by the end of this calendar year for occupation next legislative session.
And Commissioner, what is the total cost for the building? What's it going to be in the end? Do you have a list of the change orders that we could have for both that and the Capitol? What is the final number that we have?
Madam Chair, we are continuing to operate with the $77 million budget, rounding that was approved by the legislature for the building.
Okay, and Commissioner Mossman, does that include the furniture and any of the technology? What do we get for that? Is that just the walls? Does that include the carpet? What does that include?
Madam Chair and members, as with any new state construction project, it would provide for certainly the technology and building furniture and the needed everything that you mentioned, Madam Chair, to make the building functional and usable for the tenant to move in and operate from the building.
Okay, so all the furniture, desks, everything, that's all included in the $77 million figure. And can you tell me, how is that going to be financed, Commissioner?
Madam Chair and members, it has essentially already been financed through some debt financing that was as approved by the legislation that provided the authorization for the building to move forward. And so that's already in law in terms of the commitment of the state, and certificates of participation have been issued by Minnesota Management and Budget to fund the project, and then that debt service will need to be paid by the state.
Okay, and Commissioner, does that come through the Senate's rent? Because I think, if I remember correctly, in the governor's budget, he's got, is it $11.3 million in lieu of rent for the Senate to pay for that space, or how does that work? Can you kind of walk me through the financial
sure.
part of it?
Madam Chair, that's the biennial number. In the governor's budget recommendation, it's a little shy of $7.5 million a year, and that would be cover the debt service on the building.
And Commissioner Mossman, does that include the interest on the certificates of participation?
Madam Chair, members, yes, absolutely. That is, in the same vein that we provide for debt service on other projects, that would cover the financing for the building.
Okay.
And the operations.
Okay. Members, any questions at all? We've got Runbeck, we've got Carlson, Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I may be playing a little catch-up here, and maybe this has all been discussed, but just can you comment, Commissioner Mossman, on the architectural design of the building? I mean, to me, looking at the Capitol complex, the building does not fit architecturally with all the buildings that have gone before, and I'm just curious, what went on, I guess, with that design process?
Commissioner Mossman.
Madam Chair and Representative Runbeck, I'm reluctant to weigh in on people's individual architectural preferences and whether they feel it fits well with the Capitol or not. It has been, there's been a professional design team that has been engaged and on behalf of the state contractually to assist in that project throughout. And I hope that it fits well and that it looks good with Capitol, but others, you may not feel that way. So,
Representative Runbeck.
Chair, just to comment, my impression is that the Capitol board of whatever it is, maintained very tight standards in the past for design of all the previous relatively new buildings. So I'm just curious what deviated in this situation.
Commissioner Mossman.
Madam Chair, Representative Runbeck, I can't speak to deviations that I'm familiar with. I know the CAP board, I'd be happy to let them speak for themselves if they have concerns about the building, but the design has been approved through normal channels, and so the project is underway based on the design.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We have next on the list Representative Carlson, Howe, and Lane.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Mr. Mossman, the number that was requested by the Chair earlier, $77 million, do you have anything that splits out, because there's lower level parking, what is actually the cost of the parking area plus the Senate office building? And then another part of that question, will there be any other tenants other than Senate staff and senators in the building?
Commissioner Mossman.
Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, the $77 million is the net of the parking facility space, which is $13 million and would be user financed, paid for with user financing. And the at present time, the lease is with the Senate for the space in the building.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, that was basically my question. So the parking part of the cost of the 77 is $13 million and user financed. You covered both questions.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
But then over, Mr. Moshman, if I can just jump in here a second, though, too, but when you consider the life of the bonds and everything else, what is that total cost? What is it going to be? I've heard around $150 million. Is that about right?
Madam Chair, I don't have that number off the top of my head. If you're looking at the total kind of actual outlays over the life of the financing, I don't. We can get you that information. I don't have that off the top of my head.
Ms. Roberts, do you happen to have insight on that at all?
Madam Chair and members, I'm just looking at the schedule of rental payments that was included in the certificate of participation, the documents that went along with that in the lease purchase agreement, and the total in this document, which may not be, there may be some adjustments to it, was $137 million, of which $80 million was the principal and then $57 million for interest payments. But we can get updated numbers from MMB.
Okay. All right, that would be, so $137 million, you said. Okay. All right. I have on the list Howe Lane Earhart. Representative Howe.
Thank you. And I'd like to ask a few more questions about the lease purchase agreement. Is this a lease to purchase with a or a lease with option to buy? What happens if we do not, is there an out that we decide not to continue the lease? What's our cost if we decide to do that? Are there, how is that all arranged?
Commissioner Mossman.
Madam Chair and Representative Howell, there's the state has issued the certificates of participation, and so the state at this point has a financial obligation, much in the way we do with any debt service, where the state's financial reputation and expectation to repay debt financing would be on the line. So those certificates of participation have been issued. It's an obligation of the state. Obviously, contractually, we are engaged in a major contract of construction on behalf of the state, and the project is underway. So at this point, all of those parameters are in place, and we would have a responsibility to make that payment.
Commissioner, or Representative Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So to say it's a lease is a term that really doesn't flow well. We're buying the building, and we're on the hook for this thing one way or the other. We're buying the building. We're building the building. A lease is just a term to make us feel better.
Commissioner Mossman.
Madam Chair and Representative, a lease is the common tool that the department uses for any. Administer a number of buildings, obviously, across the state complex, all of which are owned by the state, and all of which have the debt service paid by the state. And the way that we manage those properties, whether it be a state agency or, in this case, the new Senate office building, we administer many of those through leases. We actually do in lieu of rent for the capital. A little bit differently, and essentially we calculate it the same way. We calculate it as if it was a lease arrangement, and then the appropriation has come through an appropriation in lieu of rent, but it could just as well come through a lease payment also, but it's essentially the same thing.
And Commissioner Mossman, it allows us to repurpose space if need be, doesn't it? Because it's not saying that so-and-so owns this piece. It's the state that owns it, and the state gets to allocate how the space is used, correct?
Madam Chair, that's right.
Okay. I have Representative Lane and Representative Earhart. Representative Lane.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going back to the architectural layout. I realize it's not going to look like the style of the Senate of this office building, which is, what did you say, 1923. But I did recall when we had the tour, it was described that it will have the curvature on the upper floors that will mimic the flow of the rotunda. So it'll be sort of like an architecturally connected in that sense. looking at it from an architectural point of view. And they said something about the surface will not be the same marble, I believe, because didn't we hear that some of that is absorbs moisture in a way that is not excellent for Minnesota? I'm just going out on the end here, but something will be used that looks like, and he pointed to two buildings in the complex and said it'll be about the color of those two. So there is the blending in some sense, and I am not an architect, and I am just going on what we said, what we heard at our tour. But it seems like there is it's a modern day architectural fit, is I guess what I want to say.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question on how we're handling the financing of the parking ramps. It seems to me that the parking ramp attached to the state office building should well be paid for. Yet we're now being burdened with some additional parking ramps as our payment to what I considered over and done with. If we're still paying rent here, that's one thing, but to now pay for the one in the transportation building and or the parking ramp that will be built with the state office building seems, you know, how many times do we have to pay for the ramp that we're using?
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Mossman.
Madam Chair and members, capital area parking is one of the, certainly is the something that we manage as a group, and it always involves a mix of type of parking spaces that we have available, and it's influenced by a lot of things. So we have some new construction, but we've also have had over the last couple of years some loss of substantial space like the Sears lot, and so there's always a changing dynamic as to the space available, and so those rates are both set with that in mind, both in terms of the nature of the parking facility itself, but the rates are set to pay for both the parking collectively, as well as making sure, obviously, the individual facilities are financed.
Well, Madam Chair.
And their shared space, because sometimes people will not always, you know, as people are in the Capitol complex, they might not always remain in the same. When you look across the complex, they might not always remain in the exact same parking facility over their either their career or their contract period.
Representative Earhart.
I don't understand if you're refinancing these every time that you add something on, because now you're what we experienced in the bonding for this complex when it was remodeled and that parking ramp are well paid for in that sense because of the timeline, as far as I can see. But now we're adding new debt in there, and it doesn't seem to justify us now at an increased rate paying for something that's, you know, our parking ramp should be satisfied without paying for something that's being built across campus, is what I'm saying. But if you insist, I guess we don't have anything to say about it.
On just the parking issue, Mr. Wasilowski told us there's going to be 20 parking spots in the Senate office building, but they're dedicated for people with disabilities. Do they pay a fee then to park there, or how does that work? And that's the only public parking, I understand, in that parking lot. Is that correct, Commissioner?
Madam Chair, that's correct, and I don't. I believe that it is. Let me double check. I believe that it's metered parking, but I believe it'll be free.
Aren't they building new parking over there too?
If you have a permit, I believe it's a.
Yeah.
It's free for those.
For four hour period. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Members, there's other members that have questions about the capital. We can kind of mix it in between here, too. So for that list, I have Representative Pugh, Schultz, and Detmer. But did you scratch? You scratched. Okay. I've got Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What's the square footage, Commissioner, of the Senate office building?
It is...
Not including the parking garage.
Madam Chair and Representative, it's about 108,000 square feet usable.
And you might not know this, but do you know the square footage of the state office building?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair and members, it is just a little over 208,000 usable square feet.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And do you know how that's split between House and Senate, the state office building?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair and Representative, not off the top of my head, okay. I can get you that
information. Thank you.
Great. And Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. When we were talking about the Capitol renovation and the art, I know when people come into the Capitol complex, especially coming from the Veterans Building, you have all the memorials. And when you come into the Capitol, you get a real good taste of what our state was like back in the day. Are we going to keep that in terms of the Civil War? You go into the governor's reception room, the artwork there, and the statues and so forth. Are we going to keep that type of work that's in the Capitol? So when people come into the Capitol, they get a real history lesson.
Commissioner Mossman.
Madam Chair, Representative Detmer, your question actually provides me an opportunity to kind of, we get this a lot in terms of, it's exciting to talk about the things that will change in the Capitol in terms of the additional public space, better access to dining facilities, et cetera, et cetera. There's just a lot of things that I think will change and be really neat. There will be a lot of architecture, in fact, that will be recaptured up on the third floor, for example, where skylights have been covered over for years. That said, one of the key principles, obviously, of the 1905 Cass Gilbert Rome is that if the project is done well, in many ways, you will notice very few changes in the Capitol, except that chunks won't fall off of it anymore, and the roof won't be leaking, and it will be restored. I think specific to your question about, and you know, the art restoration as well, but specific to your question, there will be. I would anticipate. That largely all of, you know, that's a question that the Capitol Art Preservation Art Working Subcommittee, I think, will be taking up as part of their approach to thinking about the art restoration.
Representative.
Madam Chair, just a comment. I think it's important that we take a look at what our Capitol has been like over the years and maintain that how the people of Minnesota served during the important time of the creation of our state and our country, and I hope that the board continues with that impression, that so when people come into the Capitol, they get that, they know how the men and women who served our country have served. Thank you.
Representative Nelson was on the list. Oh, I didn't see you there. You were tucked behind.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I thought I was farther down the list. I guess the question I have, is there a way we can get a copy like this of the floor plan of the new Senate office building so that we can look at that, or is there someplace we can access it online?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, I think that was covered on your tour. We don't have the same set of information for that building, really, that we have. We haven't had the same discussions because it's been a design build project as well going on, but let me see what information that we can get you.
Thank you.
Commissioner, that would be helpful for the committee. And, you know, another thing, too, is I'd like to see kind of the overall 3D modeling and the change plans for both the Capitol and for the Senate office building. We'd like to have that documentation, too. So if you can provide that, I'd like to be able to share that with the committee as a whole.
Madam Chair, again, I'll verify what we have for you. I think you mentioned 3D modeling. I personally haven't seen a lot of 3D modeling myself, so I will have to, in terms of the capital I think you mentioned, so let me verify that.
And then change orders, too. Mm-hmm. That would be great. And before I go, I do have Albright and Kahn on the list, too. Just quickly, I'll come back to it. Representative Kahn, you're next.
Yes. Okay, thank you. I want to make a few comments about the art, following up with Representative Detmer's comments about honoring the men and women who served at that time. There's not a lot of stuff honoring the women, so it would be really nice to have something that did that a little bit. I'm not sure I care what style it is. The other thing, which is a little unrelated to the just surrounding the Capitol, and I think several times we have these incredible tunnel spaces that everybody walks through, and there are things like the ones that I think I've sent some photos for is Midway Airport. That would be a great place for schools to, you know, for things that we wouldn't have to consider insurable and valuable and so forth, but schools to do children's art along that we could then rotate at different times. I mean, that's an enormous amount of space that many, many people walk through. So I know it's not exactly in this plan, but that's something I'd like to see going on the people's plate to start thinking about how to do it. I think it would just, when you walk through and look at it, you just kind of have to install a hanging rack so that you could move things in and out instead of permanently install them. It's just comments.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Look at the art. Mr. Mossman, in the schematic for the Senate office building, I note that when I've looked at it, I've seen a host of or a bank of bathrooms in the public spaces, but I also note some fairly extensive use of bathrooms in the Senate office space. My first question, I have a follow-up on a similar nature per se, but will the public have access to those bathrooms as well, or are those more the purview of the Senate and their staff, or we're concerned about the accessibility of these spaces and in a sense the collaboration between the public and their elected officials, and I'm just wondering if we're redefining space to, in a sense, not allow that to happen.
Commissioner.
This would be in the Senate Legislative Office Building, not in the Capitol.
No, Madam Chair and Representative, and I understand that. I know you see me leaping through the... I don't specifically know the answer to your question in terms of the layout of the restrooms. What I would say is that it is not, you know, in designing the buildings, there's certainly an important emphasis on making sure that there is... adequate and accessible in both of the buildings, restroom facilities that meet all of the expectations and needs of both the disability community and are adequate for the public using the building as well. What I would say about other restrooms is it is not unusual for there to be some restrooms in other places that are where the public is less likely, where other people are less likely to be, whether it be the public, although I assume constituents sometimes might also be in those areas. So I think that that's true, for example, to Representative Earhart's question earlier, and we'll still get Representative Earhart some more information, but there are, for example, restrooms that will be within contained within there's new House caucus rooms that are being created in the Capitol building in the North Wing below the chamber, for example, and there will be restrooms in that space. There have historically been and will be restrooms near accessible from the chambers that the public doesn't typically go. So there are, I think, throughout the building in order to make any building, much like you would design any public or private building to make it functional and accessible for the needs of the building, there's both types of needs are addressed.
Okay. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you know, we've undertaken a historic project, the likes of which we, as you've said, probably will not see for another century or so. And I'm just curious from the perspective of the legacy that we'll leave the generation that will look at this building in 100 years and trying to figure out what to repurpose it or renovate it for their needs in terms of, but also from a historical perspective, how are we archiving or writing the story up so that we can appreciate what we've gone through?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Albright, that's a great question. I was not anticipating that. I know that we have It makes me wonder, I'm picturing my filing system, and I'm hoping that that's not it. We have both communication staff and project program staff that are professionally and within the agency that are assisting us in managing a project of this size. And so, for example, right now on our website, for example, you can go back and get a history of both the project, and we take an awful lot of photos and retain them, so both documents, photos, artifacts, so we are managing that as well. I haven't had as much conversation with the teams about that, so to speak, as being focused on other things, but that is something that we're taking into account, so I appreciate the question. And let's hope it's not my filing system. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Members, are there any other questions at all? Representative Johnson, and then Representative Petersburg. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Moss, I agree with Representative Detmer and the importance of reflecting our history of the state, and Representative Contu and the important role of women, make sure that's shown. But I'd also note that the district I represent, white folks are now in the minority, and we really need to reflect the changing pace and diversity of the state, whether it's Hmong, Somali, Latino, Native American. Will we be seeing those faces and those images also within the Capitol complex?
Commissioner Mossman.
Madam Chair and Representative Johnson, thank you for the question. It allows me to revisit, in terms of Representative Detmer's question earlier, I think again one of the key conversations and expectations and values of having a subcommittee to kind of take up these issues and have some work is to kind of have to flesh that conversation out a little bit. You are absolutely correct that the Minnesota today looks very different from the Minnesota of 1905, and so I think that there will be needed. There is it with the public event space, for example, in the Capitol. There's absolutely an anticipation, and for me, would be an expectation that there is will be opportunities for other art and art experiences and to come into the Capitol. But that is a general conversation, both in terms of the restoration issues as well as new art, and what might be the best way to do that is ideal to have all in one place, and so I look forward to the subcommittee's work on that.
Okay. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. Just one quick brief question. You mentioned that 158,000 square feet is the new number. Does that include the common space, the hallways and so forth? And if not, what's the total square footage of all of those?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, I believe that it does include the... Well, it certainly includes the public space, and I believe that it is... It does also include what we call ceremonial space, so yes.
Correct, but
Representative Petersburg.
Excuse me. Thank you, Madam Chair. But like the big corridors and stuff, it appears, according from the color that you have here and so forth, that is not included anywhere, so that must be additional space that is not just classified usable for a particular spot. Usually it's called common area, and I was just curious if that was in addition or not.
Commissioner.
I believe all the space that you see in red, for example, because some of that is included in that number. That's all included in the number of usable space.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. And actually, what I'm looking for is the white spaces that are not mechanical, that are not the other. There's a lot of that as well. So maybe you can get that to us.
I can get that breakout for you.
Right.
And Commissioner, what might be helpful is... Of the public space that's counted, the 40,000 square feet, I think you said it was, how much of that is reservable space that the public could actually reserve and utilize that way. I think that just that distinction, you don't have to have it right now, but just when you get a moment, if you can share that with us. And I've got on the list, I have Representative Runbeck, Anderson, and Carlson. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Mossman, thinking about, again, sort of the exterior and the various uses of the Capitol building and area, will there be any thought given to, you know, the Capitol steps? I mean, a lot of people hold, you know, events outside. It seems like there's a very, you know, bare, kind of spare accoutrements for that. I mean, you're talking about PA system, any kind of shelter. It just seems like it could be made far more friendly and conducive to events, and just encourage somebody to think about that. Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative Runbeck, I appreciate the question. Thank you. An endorsement of the conversation that I mentioned earlier that we're at the front end of now, that we kind of have everything in place in terms of being able to move forward with, have the approvals and being able to move forward with the construction project, is turned towards programming and how the public will find out about the space that's available, how they will reserve it, and how we tie all of that together across the Capitol complex so that it's a much more user-friendly experience for people and convenient for them to access. So I appreciate that.
Okay. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Mossman, I'd like to backtrack a little bit. Something that Representative Nash brought up earlier. I'm more of a business guy than a politician, and this figure that he brought up about the 3,000 jobs created. This last year, I created 7. These are brand new jobs. I didn't bring anybody over from another project. Is there any way that we can follow up on this 3,000 jobs created figure to find out how many of these contractors have actually hired new people? Because that's how I always take that quote. When somebody says X amount of jobs are created, they have to be new jobs, not pulling somebody off of another project. Is there any way that we can some sort of do an audit of the contractors to find out exactly what the figure was? I mean, even within 50, because I doubt that this 3,000 jobs created figure isn't even close.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. And I will ask some more questions on that myself. But I do think that I'm anticipating that the number, you know, that we would get would work with the vendors and the contractor to identify what that is. I do know that there's been a substantial uptick in the construction and the trades industries. And so I do think that there are quite a few more jobs than there have been in the past few years in that industry. Whether or not, I guess one of the challenges in this, it always depends on your starting point, right? Is the starting point 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 5 months ago? So I have no doubt that you're familiar with those challenges, but I will ask more questions.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I want to go back to the archiving of the history of the project, and I do see the Historical Society sitting here, and I know some of us sometimes do ask those kinds of questions. I remember I was asking some questions a while back on the Capital Investment Committee about Fort Snelling, and interestingly enough, the questions I was asking were provided by the Historical Society, because I was turning the clock back to the way the Fort Snelling area was at an earlier time. Also, I asked some questions, I think in that same committee, about the Capitol and the way it was in 1905. And again, the Historical Society had that information. I do know that informally, like some of you may remember Tom Olmscheid, who was our photographer for the Minnesota House, he has been following the project very closely on his own, and actually had a display that I wasn't able to make it to. But maybe at some point we could ask the Historical Society if they're doing something beyond what would be Mr. Mossman's files, so that this is properly archived, so that future generations, maybe when they're revisiting the Capitol restoration, they'll know what was done when. And I think I see the Historical Society coming forward, so if we could hear maybe briefly from Mr. Kelleher.
And that would be great. And Representative Carlson, I think when they redid the House the last time around, they had I remember seeing a book kind of chronicling that, and I assume that's part of the process. But if you want to speak to it.
Madam Chair, excuse me for the record, David Kelleher, Minnesota Historical Society. Representative Carlson, Representative Albright. That was a very, very good question. We've been involved very closely in the design and planning process of the Capitol restoration to ensure, you know, historical fidelity of the building to its 1905 appearance. Throughout the process, we've been a resource for historical information on the original Capitol as well as restorations that have happened over time. And part of the plan that we'll be following with the Department of Administration during and after the completion of this project is that we will be the archive, as it were, of this project. One of the components of the construction and design process is to create what's called a historic structures report, and that's a multi-volume repository of all the information that we know about the historic nature of the building and its various reconstructions over time. And unfortunately, there are a few gaps over time, 40s, 50s, and 60s, where we're not quite sure how, why, and when things happened within the building. So in order to take that 100-year look, when someone 100 years from now is saying, well, what did they do in 2014 and 15? We'll have that record. That record is kept by the Capitol Historic Site staff, who are Minnesota Historical Society staff who run the tours and are the research entity for that. And to the extent that space allows, the space that you see in orange or yellow on the ground floor where they will have their offices, that will be a sort of a library or repository for that information that researchers and the public and legislators and anyone who's interested can come and talk to our staff and access that information.
And Mr. Kelleher, we were talking a little bit about the restoration of the artwork and so forth, and that's, you know, there's a subcommittee that's working on that. Do we have an idea of when those costs will be presented to the legislature? It's not in the governor's budget now, so when can we anticipate to see that?
Madam Chair, the first stage in that process is to do an assessment, and that's to get professionals who understand what needs to be done with that artwork to write up specs for how the work would be done and attempt to put a cost on it. I'm hesitant to put even a ballpark at this point on what that would cost, but I believe that the Department of Administration with the various contractors is working on getting that assessment underway. We have staff who are experts in conservation work who will consult with the consultant to come up with a plan for doing that. But it's very exacting work. If you on your tour might have seen some of the artwork, you know, you don't just wash it down. You need to, in some cases, it's getting the right solution and going over each square inch with a Q-tip or whatever the appropriate method of conservation is. So to answer your question, I think that the assessment work will be happening in the next several months, and then we'll have a sense of what the ballpark cost would be, and we'll move from there.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Keller.
Thanks.
I've got Representative Nelson and Albright. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I guess this is a response to a little bit of the question that Representative Anderson asked, and I'm glad he didn't use the term that some people in the past have used with construction workers, calling them temporary jobs, because, I mean, there is some question about what those numbers are when you do a project, how many jobs that create. But if a contractor is working on this project and he moves people from job A to job B, that's sometimes in the work of the job. But a construction worker, most of them will work for multiple contractors over multiple years, and they may work 2 weeks on this project and 3 weeks on the next, and if they're lucky, a year on a project where they don't have to move from job site to job site. But those are all good paying jobs, and with those, all those, putting all those so-called, some people call them temporary jobs together, a person can get a 30-year pension and retire with dignity. And I mean, I just, I'm, I, As a carpenter, it bothers me when people look at those jobs and say, well, they're not real jobs because I'm not going to work for 3M and I'm sitting in an office for 30 years because I'm moving around and I may not be on this job site for 30 years. Anyone that has built a house or done a remodeling project does not want somebody on their job site for 30 years. And I mean, sometimes that's a misunderstanding when we talk about these jobs. When that project isn't created, say at the Senate office building, say at the renovation, those people either won't be working or will be working someplace else, and that's just the nature of the industry.
Okay. Representative Nash, to this point, you said?
Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Anderson, Representative Nelson, the question that I originally was curious about was more of a project basis versus a job basis. So we heard on the tour that there would be the need for a fabrication of certain historical architecture pieces like doorknobs or hinges or things like that. I would view that very much as a project-based engagement for a person that would be hired to do that versus a long-term job. I don't discount your point of people who are working on a job. I'm curious, and I'm sure Representative Anderson is as well, as to projects that are going to be sent out to a shop who is going to have that one project and then be done with the overall engagement with this project. That's what I'm trying to find out to make sure that isn't being constituted or counted as a job.
Okay. Got Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I sincerely appreciate Mr. Kelleher's response for the historical record. I think that's absolutely imperative that we leave a searchable and readable record in terms of the task, the monumental task that we're undertaking. So I really do appreciate your efforts, and I look forward to reading about it in the decades to come. Mr. Mossman, I'm looking at the third floor plan. I'm a bit of a curiosity seeker from the perspective of architectural drawings, and so my eye was drawn to two points with regard to, if you take a look off of the left of the house chamber, there's a little red square. It's not annotated in terms of anything other than it's public space.
Commissioner?
And I'm curious as to its purpose.
Madam Chair and Representative Albright, purpose could fluctuate. I know that one of the spaces that we are contemplating, given that there will be additional, hopefully significantly additional public space and program space in the Capitol, and much to the questions that Representative Runback and others were asking regarding how will the public access the space and use the space, that there may be a need for having a contact point from an events management standpoint to have the readily available individual to make sure that the public space, in terms of the process of accessing the public space, to have that available. So that is one potential use for that space.
Madam Chair.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand that I was just informed that might also be a room that mothers with small children might also use.
Commissioner.
I thought the Madam Chair and
I think
members, there is a mother's room undoubtedly in the building. I thought it was on a different floor, but that it may be that space.
Madam Chair, to my second question.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Mossman, on that same floor plan, I note that the house is annotating a certain amount of space that is, in a sense, dual purpose for public use. Could you describe what that is? That just open floor plan for meetings of the public that would be useful for them as well? What would be the dedication in terms of kind of the multiple usages for that space?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair and Representative, working on that right now with the space agreement resolved last week. Early conversations have been to provide space that would be available for short-term meeting or office-type space to facilitate functions that go on in the Capitol or in the public event space.
Thank you, Minister.
And then, Commissioner, I think I have an answer to Representative Earhart's question on the bathroom space over by the House chamber. If you look at the plan, when you come in to where the page's desk is, to the left there, that looks like a bathroom to me. I assume that would be the new bathroom to replace the space that had to be consumed by other things. Is that correct? Or
Madam Chair, I believe that you're correct. There will be one in order to accommodate accessing the lower floor. There will be one member facility that will be outside of the kind of floor area, but then there will also be also in response to Representative Earhart's questions, if you drop down to first floor, kind of below the chambers where there's the House caucus rooms, there will also be restrooms in those spaces as well.
Right.
The blue space on the north wing, both sides of the building there are House minority and majority caucus rooms.
Okay.
And in the back of that area, there's.
All right. We have one last question, Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually have two things I want to ask about. The first one is, in my history with public construction, the strength of the design, one of the measurements was the amount of change orders that occurred. And in either one of these projects, where are we at on that?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair and Representative, that's not a number that I track daily. I can talk to construction managers and get that. It's a pretty mammoth project, so I don't know what the answer to that question is right now.
Okay. And I've got the tax chair from Representative Lunan.
The other point is just so that we don't end up with a conversation after the fact. I know in another big public construction project, there were issues with the effects construction had on wildlife such as birds. Has any of that been factored in on the new legislative building to get out ahead of that issue?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair and Representative, we are making every effort to factor in all issues as we move forward with the buildings in the best possible way.
Great. Thank you, members. If you have more questions, feel free to reach out to Commissioner Mossman offline. And with that, we are adjourned.